Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 podcast.
And welcome back. Great to have all of you with us. Second half of the show, and we've primarily been talking about the Big Ten media deal and what the trickle-down domino effect could be. Back to you for the phone calls right now, and AC is in Jersey.
Good afternoon, Mr. Feinbaum. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Well, pretty soon, Mr. Feinbaum, you're going to say AC from Canada, because I am moving out there for good. I'm sick and tired of this American, fat American. I hate them. They make me sick. I don't know how you live in America, Mr. Feinbaum. As soon as I go to Canada, I'm going to give you some updates how Canada is like. I hope I'm going to have a good time, because I'm sick and tired of it, Mr. Feinbaum. Do you feel the same way about this fat Americans? Can you please be honest today?
No. AC, hold on. I love this country, and I'm proud to be an American. And I'm really trying to understand where your anger is coming from.
Because I hate this fat Americans. I love this country. I like United States of America, and I'm proud to say it. I just hate this fat Americans. All I see is fat people. Another fat person. I'm sick and tired of it. No wonder obesity rate is super high, Mr. Feinbaum. Don't you see that in a local restaurant, Mr. Feinbaum? Don't you see that?
AC, I'm just a talk show host, but I'm just detecting from this call that you might need a little bit of help.
Oh, yes, I do. As soon as I go to Canada, I'm going to get all the help because I'm going to relax. Because I hate them, man. Because they make me sick. All right? They make me sick. While I'm looking at stupid Wendy, most likely I'm going to see a fat American, most likely. Matter of fact, I do. So that's the biggest problem. How come they cannot be skinny? How come they cannot get in shape, Mr. Feinbaum, like you? It doesn't make no sense. I mean, come on now. You know what, Mr. Feinbaum? When I get to Canada, I'll let you know how I'm doing. I hope I'm going to do well. But like I said, I'm going to reiterate. I'm going to like America, but the problem is it's the people. I hate the people. They make me sick. They're garbage. They're idiots. I don't know what to tell you, Mr. Feinbaum. They're garbage, all right? As soon as you see your garbage can, you're going to see them in there. Matter of fact, your next color and the one after, I hate all of them. They all make me sick. Mr. Feinbaum, you seem like a nice guy. Thank you so much for taking my call. You know I love you. Cheerleaders, I love you too.
Yeah, I think it might be time for AC to get some help and maybe quit calling us, don't you? This might be the angry one of the. I don't want to say that was the angriest call we've ever had, but we've never had a call quite like that. Man, I don't know where to go after that. Curtis is up next.
Hey, Paul, how you doing today?
I don't know, but I'm glad to hear from you.
Hey, man, I tell you, I don't know what's wrong with AC. But hey, I'm a veteran and I love this country. I mean, things haven't always went our way, but hey, you know, we're born here and we're free. We don't have all the stuff going on. Paul, you know, you was talking about Eli Gold for broadcaster. I'm not an Alabama fan, of course. You already know that, but I do. I've enjoyed some of his calls and listening to him, and it just makes me think about we lost Vince Scully here recently, and you know, you might not be as old, but you remember Dizzy Dean?
Oh, sure, I do remember Dizzy.
Cardinals game, and it's just, you know, the broadcasters, you know, they call his name now, but when football first came out on TV
back in the day, the first iteration of football announcers you had, let me think.
Don Meredith
and Howard Cosell on Monday night. You on college ball, you had Chris Schenkel, and then Keith Jackson, and
right.
You know, Kurt Gowdy was the famous baseball announcer after Dizzy Dean, and
right.
You know, the football announcers, you had Pat Summerall and Ray Scott, some of the other ones, Lindsey Nelson, really some
Jack, I mean, Buck.
Jack Buck, Harry Carey, yeah, they were in a class of their own.
Yeah, and you know them guys, but I do want to say this about Eli. I hope that everything's well with him, and my prayers are with him or whatever he's going through.
Well, thank you, Curtis.
You mentioned a name from Tennessee that I had forgot all about until you had mentioned his name in a call earlier. Hacksaw Reynolds.
Oh my goodness!
I remember Hack.
He was a mean player.
Oh yeah, he was.
Steve Kiner, you know, he played with Steve Kiner, who really, he was a great linebacker,
right.
But he became famous primarily for his line when they were about to play Ole Miss, and they said, what do you think about Archie Manning? And he said, Archie who? And Ole Miss upset the number two ranked Volunteers. I think it was 38-0.
Right. But, yeah, that was a name I had forgotten about. Paul, and just to hear his name called. It was just good to, you know, go back down memory lane.
Yeah, hey, Curtis, when your nickname in college is Hacksaw, nobody wants it. Nobody's bothering you, I can assure you.
Yeah, Paul, and another thing, Paul, that you was talking about, you might not have been talking about. Oh, the rankings. I'm glad we ain't ranked. I'm going to tell you why. Because we're gonna hook some people this year, and people might as well realize Tennessee is back. We might not be up at the Alabama level or something like that, but Georgia. But Tennessee football is back, and I think that's going to be motivation for us to have a great season.
Well, it's great to hear from you again, Curtis. You call us again soon, and take care of yourself. Thanks for the kind words. Phil is up next in North Carolina. Hello, Phil.
Hey, Paul. Hope you're doing better than AC. I think I'm doing a little better than AC.
I think everyone's doing better than AC.
Okay. I hope you're not completely weary of talking about whatever is coming out of Nick Saban's mouth yesterday or today. But this whole thing about the rebuilding, for some reason, it brought back an association about Tiger Woods. This was probably 25 years ago. I mean, he was just coming on the scene, but he was starting to win everything.
Right.
And he won a tour event, not a major, just a regular tour event. And he obviously wasn't playing his best.
Oh.
And then when he was interviewed afterwards, he said he was glad, something along the lines that he was glad to realize that he could win out here on the tour without his A game.
Right.
And there were a lot of players and media not very happy with him at all.
I do remember that.
And it wasn't that it wasn't true. It's just he didn't need to say it. And, you know, he was still making his legend. Saban is already a legend. But it feels to me like Saban's almost become the precocious kid who you just never know what he's going to say or how to make sense of what he says.
Phil, I definitely remember that. And, yeah, all the veterans were insulted that Tiger could beat him with their B game. I think one of the issues with Saban is there's not a during the season you hear more from him because he'll do an interview with ESPN or talk to CBS, but right now there's very limited availability. He does not engage with the media. So his words are measured and examined, and some of it is really the first dissemination of his comments. And it's not, you know, if you hear everything in context, you can understand it, but we don't hear things in context. We
right.
Usually we get an alert from ESPN or a Twitter alert that Nick Saban said last year's loss to Georgia was because Alabama was rebuilding. So the reaction goes into overdrive, and I'm as guilty of it as anyone, please. But I think because we hear from Saban so little, we tend to overanalyze everything he does.
Yeah. Well, I just want to briefly go back to the comments he made. Is that a high school coaches meeting or something like
yeah.
that? And that was where he said his backup receivers were not ready to play when the moment came in the championship game, and that created, well, it created some fracture in his relationship with those particular players. But the first question that came to my mind was, whose responsibility was it to get those players ready? I mean, they weren't guys buried on the depth chart. These were guys who were the immediate backups to the starters.
Phil, ultimately, that is the head football coach at the University of Alabama.
Exactly. You know, there was no reason to expect that they wouldn't need to play a role in that football game or some other. So, yeah.
But, you know, another thing, Phil, and I, every time I talk about this, people get upset in Alabama. But part of the problem with Saban is that he's not really held accountable for anything he says. So when that outlier comment occurs, everyone bows up. And, you know, he is so good. Now, that was part of the conversation earlier with John Talty. He's so good at mastering and defeating the media that there's no give and take. And, you know, it's either Nick Saban does one of his rants, or people ask him rather pedestrian questions. Hey, thanks for the call. We'll take a break. More to come. We'll talk to a rather famous law school professor coming up here in a few minutes who argued one of the most consequential cases involving college football ever, maybe the most consequential.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Paul. That's hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
And Mel is up next in Florida. Good afternoon, Mel.
Happy Tuesday, Paul.
Good afternoon.
It's been a while, but I just couldn't stand it any longer after AC's call. Did you ever watch any Seinfeld?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, it's kind of hard to miss over 25 years.
Do you remember the episodes when George worked for the Yankees and there was
yes.
a fictional Steinbrenner?
Right.
That voice, AC was that voice of Steinbrenner. But I'll tell you what, AC, there's an old saying that when the clown comes into the palace, he doesn't become the king. The palace becomes a circus. And that makes you the ringmaster when he comes into the palace. AC's like athlete's hood. After a while, it just gets annoying.
Yeah, nothing will work.
And when he comes on, I have to turn on the closed captioning so I can try to understand what he's saying. And even the closed caption, whoever types that doesn't even understand him.
Nobody does.
So I don't get him.
And well, I think until today he was just an abnormal caller. He became certifiable today.
Certifiable? Are you kidding me? I'm not even sure he reached that. He exceeded certifiable. But one other One other caller.
I don't know. I just don't know. I don't know what's after that, though. That's why I used that phrase.
Is J.K. J.K. called in the other day, and he's complaining about I-Man always bad-mouthing Jim. And you know what? J.K., only time he ever calls in is to bad-mouth Alabama and their excuses. So I think that makes him a hypocrite. One other thing. You forgot Tensi the Biletnikoff in your great passing combos.
Oh, yeah. You're absolutely right. That was very famous.
I saw them a long time ago at Florida State, and they were outstanding. And Biletnikoff, of course, he was a great Raider player, and the Biletnikoff Award's named after him. So he was truly outstanding as a pass catcher. And I'll never forget the Florida State games that my family took me to. My dad and mom were both Florida State alumni, or my dad was. My mom had to drop out when she had me. But anyway, they were a great combo. But I just had to say that about AC. And J.K., call in and try not to be too hypocritical. Talk about football. Remember, this is the SEC Network. Call the ACC Network. Thanks.
Thank you, Mel. Appreciate it. Let's check out Ranger next.
Hey, Paul. How you doing today, buddy?
What's up?
You there?
Yes, I am.
Well, good. I'm glad you are. Going off what Mel said, because I can't hear good with, you know, all the loud explosions and things that I've been through, I have to watch your show on closed caption. And there's a lot of callers that I miss. I don't know what they're talking about, and AC certainly one of them. But I wanted to ask your opinion. Last year, Nick Saban, you know, they do the halftime one question interviews when
yes.
coming off the field, and I know one of them was against Tennessee, and I don't know if Tennessee was ahead. It was close in that game, and Nick Saban came off the field, and it was Laura Rutledge. She asked him a question. He just stood there, and so she asked him another, and he, you know, he wasn't rushing off or anything like that. And then in the championship game, is it Tracy Wolfson? Is that her name?
Yes. Well, I think Jamie Erdahl was the CBS reporter last year.
Okay. It was a woman. She asked him a question, and she was able to ask him a second. And she apologized for the second question, saying, "I know I'm holding you up, making you anxious. You want out of here." And he answered the question, and then he basically just asked himself a question and stayed there and talked. And I don't want to use the word likable, because I don't know him from Adam, and he's probably a likable guy.
Mm-hmm.
But
well, let me say this, Ranger. Whether he's likable or not is open for somebody else to debate. But I do think the halftime interviews are patently ridiculous. You got a coach who's in the heat of battle within the framework of college football. He's trying to get to the locker room to take a break for 2 minutes, talk to his team, talk to his coaches, and he's got to answer some inane question. Well, coach, how do you feel about the first half? Look at the scoreboard. I mean, isn't it obvious? So it's easy to criticize a coach or praise a coach, but it's something that it's mandated. It's part of the deal. But I'm not sure it really serves any purpose. After the game is different. You do want to hear from a coach after the game. But the halftime interview, frankly, needs to go. We'll take a break. More to come after this. More of your phone calls. A couple more interviews, including a conversation with a very famous law professor who argued the most consequential college football case ever in front of the United States Supreme Court just a few years ago.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, shopify.com/network.
Hey, we welcome you back. We began the program nearly 3 hours ago with the breaking news out of the Big Ten. We were talking about perhaps a billion-dollar multi-layered television deal yet to be announced, and many are wondering, how did we get to this point? Well, you have to go back in time, and we are going to do that today with a very special guest. I can't tell you how excited we are to welcome a longtime professor at the University of Oklahoma. He's a former dean, he's a former mayor, Andy Coach, joining us. Professor, thank you very much for joining us. So we won't blame you for everything that's gone wrong in college football. You tried to correct the sport, but how are you? And thanks for joining us today.
You're most welcome. It has been an interesting run since that time, and I'm afraid that case opened Pandora's box and lots of difficult things came out.
Well, I'd like to go back nearly 40 years, maybe even longer than that, because I remember the case, and it was two universities, Georgia and the University of Oklahoma. But I know what it was about. Obviously, antitrust had something to do with it. But how did it all get started, and especially your involvement?
Well, what happened was the Title IX came along. And in schools that didn't get any state funds to support the athletic program, they were casting about for dollars. And NCAA was obdurate. Walter Byers wouldn't move off the idea that he thought the television would reduce live attendance. Basketball has proved that's not true. And they simply wouldn't happen. And Georgia and OU were the only two that had the courage to sue the organization of which they were members and knew they needed the NCAA. But on the other hand, they did need the income and thought the income would come when they were able to televise their own ball games instead of just having a game of the week. It could be on at all times for various different reasons, and that would generate some more revenue.
Yeah, and I'll have to remind the audience that wasn't around back then like we were, there was basically one game on. If you were the University of Oklahoma or Georgia or Alabama, you might get on three times a year or X number of times over 2 years, depending on circumstances. And how long did it take, Professor, to get from the moment this case was filed to that momentous day when you stood before the Supreme Court?
It took about 2 years. The NCAA, of course, hired a lot of lawyers to, and they'd never lost a case, and they were just very difficult. We tried to settle it, and we lost. We won at the trial court level, and we won again at the appellate court level, and then we went to Supreme Court, and we tried to settle with them some kind of an agreement we could come out with at each point, but we learned that NCAA stood for never compromise anything anytime, and they kept fighting us, and we kept winning and finally did. NCAA never lost a case up to that time in their history, and they thought they would prevail and didn't, but it was one that sent some shockwaves around and has caused a lot of the problems that we have seen in the last few years.
I know you've probably been asked this by your students over the years because, you know, I was at the Supreme Court a couple of years ago, and I was gobsmacked just sitting there watching it, from a reasonably close distance. What was it like to stand in front of that group and argue a case?
Well, I had not been an antitrust lawyer, and we got this case, and it came into my lap, and I didn't want to turn it away, obviously. So I had a lot of law to learn. But by the time I stood up to argue in the Supreme Court of the United States, I think I knew as much law about that subject as any man alive and was comfortable with it. And I think it went well. And we didn't know, of course, how it would come out. I knew Justice Rehnquist wasn't with us, and I was pretty sure Justice White wasn't. But the others seemed to be listening, and I don't mean the others weren't, but they were at least responding a little bit in the way they looked at me, and I did get several kind of nice questions. And of course, Judge Stevens got the case and wrote a beautiful opinion.
Yeah, there's such a it's been quoted many times, and as well as recently, the line that Justice White used, a former football player, nearly won the Heisman Trophy. Can you relate that to us, and in what context he said that to you?
Sure, and I was a little surprised because the case hadn't been decided yet, but I was at a small group with him, and he would do sort of a fireside chat, and I'd gotten to know him a little bit, and he's one of the most amazing human beings I've ever known. He did so many amazing things. I mean, attending Yale Law School while he was being the Rookie of the Year as a running back for the Pittsburgh Steelers is a pretty amazing event. But he just said to me as we were leaving the room, he said, "Andy," he said, "yeah, you may win that case," he said, "but you'll regret it." And I never really have regretted it, but there's been some regretful things about it.
And it's pretty obvious what has happened since then. That moment really enabled so much of what we are doing today, including where I work at ESPN, the idea that you can wake up in Oklahoma and watch college football from 11 o'clock in the morning until past 2 in the morning is a result, really, of this. It has spawned now billions of dollars. As you reflect back, I know it's easy to wonder about the consequences of a move nearly 40 years ago, but your thoughts as you have watched this kaleidoscope of college football pass through your eyes?
Well, you know, the schools lost money the first year out. They were scrambling around, and we had a suit for some other little television stations that didn't think we were that the CFA at the time was my client, the College Football Association,
right,
cut behind us, and they were all the big school football schools except the Pac-10 and the Big 12. I mean, the Big 10 and the Pac-10. And we watched it develop, and of course, all of a sudden, it began to make more and more money, and people began to say, what happened, I think, along the way? The biggest problem today, I think, in college football is the portal and the likeness provisions. And what happened was that all of a sudden the universities are making billions and the coaches are making billions, and everybody says, well, gee, the students ought to get something. But by doing that, we put them in a position where they're really semi-pros. They're not amateurs anymore. And I'm afraid it's going to lead, unless we put some kind of a cap on it or do something, I'm afraid it's going to lead to a time when the schools that have the most money are going to get the best football players, because they're going to guarantee them a good bit of likeness income.
Yeah, and I would like to ask you about that, Professor Coates, because you are, you've been on the faculty and have been the dean at a school that is as prominent in college football as any. It has recently made the move and has not yet joined, but will soon, the SEC. How now can this problem be addressed, considering that it is out of the genie, so to speak?
It really is, and it's more complicated again because of the portal. Because anybody decides they can, any of the smaller school gets a good player, they're going to hop to some place where the offensive linemen each guaranteed $50,000 a year or something just for playing football. And I think there has to be some kind of a slowdown in the ability to transfer, so that a young man who gets mad at the coach can't walk out the door immediately go somewhere else, or can't see the dollars booming for him somewhere else and leave. I think that's awkward. And then the amount of money that they can make ought to be somewhat limited in some way. And I'm not smart enough to figure out how to do that exactly, but I think there's got to be some kind of leveling device, or I'm afraid that the competition level is going to be changed abruptly over the years as the big schools get bigger and the smaller schools fall away.
Professor, just from a legal standpoint, I was talking to an administrator recently, and they're always, I mean, you have to be concerned about antitrust. That goes for anyone who doesn't have exemptions. But as you look at it from your perch after a career in law, having done what you have done, what do you see beyond the things that you laid out as some of the issues? But from a legal standpoint, what are the biggest issues facing the sport right now?
Well, to some of it, it's the same kind of difference that you can't limit exposures and you can't limit the product, which are the football games. And I think that makes it somewhat difficult. You know, the obvious answer would be to Congress to pass a exemption for college athletics like they did for baseball years ago, exemption of the antitrust laws. And that would, I think, allow the coaches and the NCAA to come together with some kind of a plan that would level the playing field. Other than that, I think it's going to be a hard hill to climb.
Yeah, we had Senator Tuberville on the other day who is pushing legislation, but not to get you into the political arena, but trying to get anything out of Congress. We just got through watching the weekend Congress trying to pass bills, and the idea that anybody, that you could get 60 senators to agree on this seems pretty unlikely.
Oh, I agree. I think it's going to have to deteriorate first. I'm afraid there may come a time when it so obviously needs some kind of managerial capacity that Congress may. Usually Congress doesn't do things until it gets desperate. And maybe when they see that happening and their schools start losing their football players, can't win any football games, I think their people in their communities are going to put some pressure on them to do something about it.
I think
that's the best hope.
Yeah, there's a lot of concern, too, about there's an issue with the Big Ten right now. Some of the players are pushing the idea of unionizing, and I realize that's a whole different story in itself, but just from your experience, how do you think that would work, or could it possibly work to make this amateur game even more professional?
Well, I think it could. I mean, maybe if they unionized, it would spread the wealth so that it wasn't just the stars that were getting all the money, but rather others along the way would. If that's what a union usually does, is spread the wealth. And but I think having to deal with a union from a coach's standpoint with an open portal is going to be extraordinarily difficult. And if the union formed so that the players as part of the union couldn't walk away, that might have some benefit for the coaches. But it seems to me it's very murky waters, and I do think the union proposition reflects what they really are. They're semi-pros. And you remember that, hell, they took the Olympic medals away from Jim Thorpe because he played A or AA baseball for a summer and got paid for it. And the idea that now kids are going to get paid for every football game they play, or a lot of them are, just is difficult. And I guess maybe because you and I have been around the block a couple of times and seen it, I think that it's a peril.
Professor, before you go, I'm curious about something, because we go out, we travel to a lot of campuses, and we're eager to get to Norman when the SEC move finally happens. But in dealing with students for so long, and you were the dean there for many, many, many years and have been a professor for even longer, what have you noticed in terms of the evolution of your students, particularly in the law school, from when you began to what you're currently dealing with?
Well, we have extraordinarily bright kids coming in. I mean, they are really, I think, first class. They're very smart. They don't write worth a damn, but they can sure read well. And I'm glad that computers came along so I don't have to try to disentangle their final examinations. print them up on my computer and handle them. They're a lot better. That's a great bunch of kids. I've been really pleased with the attitudes and enthusiasm and the kind of work that can turn out.
Professor, you just said it. If computers had been around when I was in school, I perhaps would have made something out of my life instead of doing what I'm doing. So, because the professors couldn't read a word. I can't read my own writing. I don't know how you used to go through those papers. That must have been maddening.
That was the hardest part. And then, of course, what you're trying to do is find anything in there that has redeeming social value, that has something that makes some sense. And, I always judge myself by how well the students do on my finals. And if I've done a good job, they ought to be able to answer right up. But, but sometimes they didn't. My undergraduate is kind of like yours. Dr. Merrill said I was cursed with an overactive sense of conviviality in undergraduate school. And I told him not only was I, but it came back on me from time to time.
Well, you've had an extraordinary career, and I can't tell you what a honor and pleasure it is to have you join us today, and we hope we can stay in touch, because there are plenty of issues about the past and the future that we would love to talk about. Thank you so much.
Well, it's a pleasure, and I really enjoy watching your show. Thanks. Well,
thank you very much. Professor Andrew Coates, a part of history, an important part of history, and we really appreciate him giving us a few minutes. And we will take a break. That was a case that opened the door for everything that we are currently going through. We're back after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And what a day it's been. And let's check out Jeff in Columbus, Ohio.
What's going on, Paul?
Hey, Jeff.
Hey, I just wanted to call in and see why you're being so confrontational today, Paul.
Been a bad day, Jeff.
I mean, you love me in with AC, which I don't appreciate at all to be associated with that freak. And then Larry from Missouri calls in for the first time in, what, years, and he says a couple words, and you just wanted to arch your back and pick a fight with him, Paul. You didn't even let the guy explain his point.
I was pretty clear.
What's up with that?
I was pretty clear I knew what his point was, but that's okay.
But, yeah, but once you let him, I'd like to know what he was going to say so I could determine whether I was going to agree with him or not. I mean, you didn't even give him a chance to explain. I don't even know what his point was.
Well, Jeff, you can hit me up later. I'll be happy to share it with you.
Okay, but you know, I don't. You mentioned something about you getting certain things make you sick when people hang up. I'm wondering if it's phone calls that are making you sick today, Paul, or if it's this new Big Ten contract that's making you and all the boys at ESPN and the SEC sick to their stomach. Is that what's going on?
We're having a rough day, Jeff. The fact that we're not going to be able to be part of any more Purdue-Indiana games at noon.
I mean, are the suits going to let me call
no
in?
No more
Illinois-Northwestern,
no more Rutgers and Maryland games. It is a bad day down here in the deep south.
Yeah, I told you a month ago, Sankey, I could tell Sankey was a little upset with SEC media days. And all you, and you could just see it in his face, Paul. He's nervous about this, how he's going to combat the television sets we have here in the Midwest and now out in L.A. I mean, you know he's nervous.
Well, Jeff, you know, if you've been listening today, I've been pretty complimentary toward Kevin Warren and the deal. You know that.
Well, you have, but that's why I'm wondering if you've been sick to your stomach and you've been confrontational today. Maybe you've had some big meetings there at ESPN today.
By the way, Jeff, I've got a new book coming out called My Conference Can Be Your Conference, Why the Big Ten Now Rules College Football.
There you go. I mean, I heard you're getting a lot of upfront money for that, for your next book. I mean, shoot. Come on, Paul. Just, I mean, hand some of that out a little bit. My goodness. But I'm just wondering, are the suits going to shut my calls down to ESPN?
I would say after this call, you have made your last call to the SEC network. You're out of business, pal.
Luckily, the Big Ten, hey, Paul, Big Ten's printing enough money, they might give you some NIL money to harass your show.
Hey, Jeff, call me later. I'll give you my agent's name, okay?
I appreciate it. But I'm sorry, Paul, I've upset your stomach from time to time, but you take me and AC out of the space.
Jeff, don't take it literally. I was just having a little fun. We love you, man.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.